Hello and welcome to Flourish. I am your host, Narissa Golden. I'm so happy to be here, and I want you to introduce you to the amazing woman who will be my co-host for this podcast. It is Sonia Charles. Hello, Sonia.
Hi, Narissa, and I'm really delighted to be on this journey. Absolutely delighted. Yeah, wonderful.
Sonia and I first connected in 2009 when I worked for the government of Montserrat as the Director of Information and Communications. And she was returning to the island, about to launch a new company and wanting to offer sonogram services on the island. But then something, it came to her that there was a bigger need. And I was the person on the back end helping to, you know, just to get the information out about the Pink Ribbon Walk that she was starting. Sonia, what was happening in your business on the island at the time that you thought we needed to be doing a Pink Ribbon Walk?
In actual fact, the ultrasound business brought to light that a number of women were basically unaware that they needed mammograms. And as a result, they presented for ultrasound of the breast because they knew that the ultrasound had the opportunity to diagnose certain things. But what they were not aware of was that they were at the age when they needed to have a mammogram done. But unfortunately, mammogram services were not available on Montserrat. And the only thing they were left with was to come to me to have an ultrasound. And it was at that time that we were seeing women with breast issues that really needed to have a mammogram, one, because of their age, over 40, and two, because they've never had a mammogram done. So for that reason, the interest in ultrasound sort of spearheaded a need for breast cancer awareness and more so mammogram services on Montserrat. And then the Breast Cancer Awareness Walk or the Pink Ribbon Walk came into being because we had to find a way to bring people together. We had to find a way to share that message. We had community events and other things to sort of corral women and men to let them understand that ultrasound was important, but a mammogram was even more important for women of a certain age.
I think because this is a wellness podcast and we're going to go between the technical and the social and the science and all of these things. Now, because this is a podcast around women's health and wellness, I think over the time we're going to switch between the technical things, the social things, the science. And so I have a question for you right now about the science of it. Isn't a sonogram kind of a digital mammogram? Why did you think a mammogram was important if they were already having a sonogram? What's the difference?
Well, ultrasound is complementary imaging. Mammogram is an X-ray, and now we have our digital mammogram. We have a 3D mammogram now, unlike years ago when it was all 2D or analog. Analog was the very first mammogram, then we went into 2D, which was digital, but now we have 3D, which is where the breast can be visualized in slices. And the reason why mammogram is essential for women, unlike ultrasound, is that it shows the whole entirety of the breast. The entire breast is imaged in the images that are taken, whereas ultrasound is more focused. It's a particular point of the breast, and you're actually looking at different things. So ultrasound is actually used as a complementary imaging alongside a mammogram. Preferably, unless it's a child, a juvenile or adolescent, ultrasound is never used in its entirety for adult women.
Okay, I understand now, because I always thought it was just like a digital version of the same thing. No. Because mammograms can be very uncomfortable. So now you've started the Pink Ribbon Walk, and what was the response when you started it that first year in 2009?
It was amazing because what happened initially, we had to find a way to deliver the program and the awareness so that people on the island understood that it was important. And we did that with a walkathon. So the walkathon was, we were able to get the younger people to participate because kids like to collect money. And that was one way to get them to participate. Instead of just saying, we're doing a walk for breast cancer awareness, we said, okay, we have a walkathon, and this is what you have to do, X, Y, Z. And the participation was amazing in the early years and has continued to be so over the last 14 years. Last year, we did our 15 year, and to be quite honest, the the participation has increased and has evolved into something where everybody is now aware. Even the primary school kids are now aware of what breast cancer awareness is all about, what the pink ribbon walk, the pink ribbon movement is all about, and why it is so important not just to wear pink, but to take care of yourself. And we have, it's essential that women understand that wearing pink is okay. But you also have to remember that the pink is about celebrating those who have survived, being with those who are undergoing treatment, understanding what it is to be diagnosed and to be receiving bad news, and also to receive good news, like my mammogram is okay. So all those parameters come into play, and women now understand that even though you have some fear about receiving the result of your mammogram, in most cases, in a lot of cases, women are getting the treatment that they deserve to have longer survival rates. So the awareness program goes beyond. For us, it took us where women had to leave Montserrat to go abroad for treatment, and they understood that. And those who did not were given information about what would happen if they stayed on island and not seek treatment. So the journey around that awareness program on Montserrat was very real for many people because it meant leaving Montserrat, whereas in a larger setting, they can stay at home.
Now, a big part of what led to this and the challenge that you had and we had in Montserrat was that there was no mammogram service on the island. And so you had to find another source to be able to deliver the service, but also to get women to understand you need to actually leave. You actually have to invest in being able to go overseas to find out if you have this health crisis or not. Tell us about how that came together for you in terms of your partnerships, finding what was the cost of a mammogram at that time?
At that time, the cost in Antigua was 300 EC dollars, just a little bit over 100 US dollars. And that's a lot of money for someone. And then they now had to pay their airfare or a ferry ticket to get to Antigua. That's a significant amount of money to do once a year or every 2 years. And women felt that they understood by this time when we were ready to start the program, they knew they had to do it. But they also had little funds. They had women were saying, well, we need help. So we had to find a way that we could support them by reaching out to the Belmont Clinic in Antigua and the proprietor and owner, Dr. Yumel Samuel. When I reached out to him, and I've known him for years, he said, certainly, Sonia, we will do this for Montserrat and we will give you a 50% discount. So the women at that time only paid 150 EC dollars to have a mammogram, but they had to pay for their ferry or pay for an airfare to get to Antigua. And believe you me, they did. Women were traveling to Antigua by the dozens to get their mammogram done because they understood, Nerissa, how important it was for this to be done. If they meant they were going to have, they can actually ensure that the life was going to be healthy, a healthy one.
Yeah, I think also what drove that was the fact that you would see prominent women in the community, well known. It's again, it's a small, it's less than 5,000 people, so you almost feel like you know everyone. And then you would just hear about this amazing woman who would have died of cancer. And it's like, oh, I didn't know she had cancer. And sometimes it was late, very late diagnosis, or people, they kept those diagnoses to themselves. So I think there was this also this extra concern that they had to do something because they just were unaware of how serious the crisis has happened, because when it's impacting somebody around you that you know. I think that was one of the things that drove women towards getting those tests. Sonia, when you started the breast cancer awareness walk, you eventually evolved it a few years later into a charity. Why did you do that? And how did that charity help you to expand the work that you were doing on your own?
The charity helped significantly because there was an opportunity for like-minded people to come together and to help create ideas and get the ideas out in the community. And also the individuals that were part of that grouping involved healthcare, finance, community workers, and ensure that we had a nice mix within that grouping, because initially we had a lot of volunteers who were doing different things, but we realized it was important to formalize the actual delivery of the message to the people, whether we were on the radio, we were in print, or whether we were just doing a community activity. And that helped to formalize the actual projection to the community to say, well, we have a formal grouping, we are forming a charity, we are now going to raise funds to send women off to Antigua. And that was a significant boost to raising funds for getting the women off Montserrat to have their mammogram. We know that it's very hard to get with people together to focus and to be part of a grouping, because everybody has their own daily activities which they have to attend to. So on Montserrat, you'll find that a particular person could be in three or four different organizations. And really, it is the norm. Regardless of who you speak to, they are already part of two or three organizations. And that became a challenge for the organization. But however, we continued every year to make sure that we had our annual breast cancer awareness walk every October, and also to make sure that we had one or two activities, sometimes more, where we actually had activities for a whole week to push that through. But having a organized grouping called the charity was a great help, because it took the burden off one or two individuals, and we spread the burden so that we had individuals doing different things and ensuring that every program that we delivered was a success.
I think one of the things a formal organization also does is it helps to legitimize you in the eyes of your colleagues, whether it's international, whether it's government, whether it's just a corporate society, so that when you go and say, hey, we want to raise funds to do this thing, there is a sense of they're serious about this and they're committed to the cause, because they're willing to put themselves under a microscope to be seen and to be, judged by what they've done and the results that that come forward from that. I know you said in the beginning that the women were willing to just, say, hey, we're going to go and get these tests. Did that stay the same throughout the time that you were doing it, or did you find that women kind of dropped off after a while? You had to remind them that they needed to still be taking care of themselves and going to get those tests? Because is it just one time a woman had to take a mammogram?
No, in actual fact, what we did our programs so that women were told that they needed to have a mammogram every year, and at the same time every year, or at least within a year of having the first one. But that posed a significant difficulty, because financially, women are not able to finance this. And even when we offered them the mammogram, it was very difficult. The initial years had a significant compliance, where lots of women were participating, because we had the ferry service. And we also had some introduction of like reduction ferry fares. We had sometimes we will help individuals pay part of the ferry to get them across to Antigua if they didn't have the funds to make that trip. But when the ferry service was curtailed or stopped or no longer available, we saw a significant drop in the number of women that were participating in the mammogram services. And that had a significant impact on what we were trying to deliver, because we created the mammogram program. It was called the Mammogram Fund, in partnership really with the ferry service, because we thought we'll have ferry forever. We had no ideas about using the flights to Antigua for people to go to Antigua. We never thought about using, except for those individuals who were unlikely to travel by sea because of seasickness. But the majority of people who were eager to have the mammograms were really happy with the ferry service, and our numbers dropped significantly when the ferry service was curtailed or stopped. And we saw a trickle having mammograms or signing up. However, so if they did not see the doctor for 2 years or 3 years and a breast lump came, then it was always a rush to get a mammogram, and they would have to pay the airfare to go to Antigua to get it done. But we still have women in the last 4 or 5 years, when we have had a slow ferry movement, except during the holidays, women will definitely pay to Antigua to go to Antigua and have it done, or use that opportunity when flying via Antigua to stop over at the Bellman Clinic and have a mammogram before boarding their flight.
I was going to say that that was my preferred option, is that if, because I used to travel a lot for work. And so when I'd have that stopover in Antigua, either on my way out of Montserrat or on my way back, I
Yes.
would def that would be the time I would say, okay, I have a few hours, I have most of the morning in Antigua, and then I'll come over on the last flight. And so I'm going to use those hours to go to the clinic and get that test. So those are very important. I have to say that I also benefited from mammogram fund in the early years, especially with the four children. It was a burden off of me to know that I was going to get some help to do that. But it was also this awareness. It gave me permission to prioritize myself, which was something that you didn't always give yourself. So I'm very thankful for that as well. One of the things that I think has been very critical to the whole work that you've done is actually the breast health clinics that you
Yes.
initiated a few years into the charity. Tell us about why you decided that this was important, and what is it about? Tell us how to do it right.
Yeah, breast self-examination is important, and women are encouraged to do self-breast examination and also to visit their clinic or doctor to have this done. When we decided to introduce this on Montserrat, we knew that there were lots of women who were already having this done, but the majority of women were unaware that this was actually available to them at the local clinics from their GP and from the nurses at the clinic. And by asking women to come together and to visit a particular health center, to visit, we had a private doctor on the island, Dr. Ingrid Bufang, who participated in the program every time we've had it, and opened her doors at her private office to have women visit. The clinics were also arranged and quite nicely with a doctor and a nurse by the Ministry of Health to have women visit and have their breast examined. And the women were also told when they're coming to bring a friend with them. And I think I saw indications of this every time we've done this. Every year, we see groups of women leaving the office and coming out to have their breast examined during their lunchtime, for that matter. So we knew back then when we started that we were onto something and that the women were enthusiastic about it. But also, they knew that when the doctor was examining the breast, that they can also learn from what the doctor is doing and do it themselves at home. And it's very important that women ensure that the breast exam is done, because a lot of breast lumps and breast abnormalities are picked up by the women themselves or by their partners, whether it's a moment of intimacy or just playful fun, or maybe you're on the beach, or maybe you're somewhere where you're partially clothed, and you say, "Oh, actually, I can feel something." And it starts like this. And most times, because if you wait a year to get your breast examined, during that year that you're waiting, you need to do it yourself, and you need to be able to touch your breast and go from the armpit all the way around the breast, up to the breastbone and up to the collarbone, and do it in a clockwise fashion, or do it like a radial, like a spoke of a wheel, and examine from the top of the breast all the way to the nipple and up and all the way around. And the nipple is crucial because a lot of abnormalities occur in the nipple. So you have to look at the nipple. Is it looking the way it should look? Does it look larger, smaller? Has it disappeared inside? Is it sort of like dimpled? Are there any changes, any crustaceans, any kind of skin changes that you need to look for? Does it look normal? Is it painful? You're not breastfeeding, so your nipple should not be painful. So all those are
Right.
signs that something is wrong with the breast. And don't cover it up. Open up and go and see your doctor, see the clinic nurse, and have it examined, because these are all indications that breast health can be compromised when we ignore things. And if we ignore things, we need to make sure that we are looking at our breasts and get them examined as often as possible.
Wow, that's so important, and I'm so glad that you gave us an example of how we're supposed to do that, because women need to feel comfortable in their own skin, checking their bodies, and doing it regularly. So when you're in the shower and you're all soaked up, you can definitely perform the exercise that Sonia just explained to us. So one of the reasons that Sonia and I decided that this podcast was necessary was that we wanted to evolve beyond just the breast cancer awareness walk and the fundraising efforts around the mammogram fund, and to also extend the conversation beyond Montserrat, but to recognize that the wider region, Caribbean women everywhere, we share some of the same characteristics and traits, not just in our body, but also how we prioritize or don't prioritize our health. I got a wake-up call, 2023, your breast health check, when my doctor said, feel something there. You need to go and get it checked. And I was able to go to Antigua and I did the mammogram. I also did a sonogram. And the results said there was something, legit that's there. The doctor didn't think that it was, in terms of the results said, okay, it's not positive for anything. We don't think, it's cancerous, but definitely the doctor said, I think you should go to England and have further evaluation. But up until that point, I hadn't had a breast health check in quite a number of years. And so it was important that I said, well, I need to do something. So I came to England and thankfully the results were negative. I didn't have cancer. I really was relieved by that. But it also made me think a lot about the process and the fact that I hadn't been doing the work to really care for myself and to go beyond just the wearing the pink t-shirt, telling everybody they should, do their checks. This is real life. If God forbid, and for the women that have had to deal with it, it affects and impacts every area of your life. And we wanted to do some more work to make sure we were supporting and educating, not just around October, but just all year round, providing the tools and information to help you on your journey to wellness. And so that's one of the main reasons that Sonia and I decided to team up to do the podcast. Over the time ahead, we are going to meet some of the people who initially helped Sonia on the journey towards building her charity and the initiative. But the deeper conversation we want to have is about wellness and all of the areas that it does impact a woman's life. And we hope that you will join us on this journey. Sonia, tell us a bit about where you are at now in your own professional career, and what is it you're hoping that's going to happen with this podcast?
The podcast is essential because, as you've already highlighted, there is a need for a bigger look at health, not just on Montserrat, but around the Caribbean, and a bigger look at beyond breast cancer. And that is where the wellness theme has come on board, because wellness involves every aspect of our lives. And that wellness journey is something that we should all have in our diary. We should all be saying, what am I going to do to stay healthy? What can I, as a person, an individual, do for me to stay healthy? What can I do? Not what my doctor is going to do for me, or not what my nurse is going to do for me, or my employer is going to do for me, but what can I do so that I can stay healthy and have a really good life? And the podcast is important for several reasons, but the main reason here is to bring individuals on board to share journeys about wellness. Wellness encompasses your whole mind, body, and soul. It's everything that we are talking about. So we will have individuals who'll be coming on to talk about managing your fears, managing your anxieties, about results, about testing, about going for to see your doctor. What is it that we are scared of? Many of us are so scared. And just, listening to you just a while ago, it's like the time. How much time do we have? Do we put it in our diary that we have to go do this tomorrow or that tomorrow for our health? So if we have a diary, we need to do that. Start putting times in our diary for our health. And the podcast is a reminder to women and men that we have to put ourselves first. Our health comes first. And the podcast is a reminder that breast cancer is only one aspect of the journey. The journey involves many different illnesses that sometimes come like a thief in the night. And we're never ever going to be ready for those when they come. But what we do know, if we look after ourselves along that journey, we cannot eliminate everything, but we can retard some of the illnesses, slow them down a bit, and let them not come or come a bit later on. So that's what the key thing about the podcast is, helping people to understand that the wellness journey, it's your journey. And along that journey, your doctor and nurse, neighbor and friend and relatives will help you.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for that, Sonia. I'm looking forward to having these conversations with you and our future guests. And again, you're right. It's going to be a reminder, not just to the people that will watch it and listen, but also to ourselves that we do need to prioritize our health because it is important that we do that. We've got so much life ahead of us. There's so many things that you still want to try and do and dream
Yes.
and make happen. And we need to do that. We want to do that well, you
Yes,
know?
definitely.
So here's to many, many more episodes of Flourish, the wellness podcast for Caribbean women. We are so glad that you joined us today. My co-host, Sonia Charles, and myself, Narissa Golden, we say thank you and see you soon.
You've been listening to Flourish, the wellness podcast for Caribbean women, produced by Rebel Rock Media Limited, music by Peter Spacey. Discover more at wearerebelrock.com.